Welcome to the November 28th, 2014 Drupalize Me podcast. Drupalize Me. Hello! I am Addison Berry, and I'm back for another podcast. And I have three folks on with me today. They are Larry Garfield.
Greetings, programs.
Greg Dunlap.
Hello there.
And Gabor Hoitsi.
Hello, hello.
And the reason I have these three guys on is if you've been reading things in the community lately, you might have seen some posts about community leadership. And there's been a lot of blog posts and a lot of long comment threads and a lot of interesting conversation. It's something that's sort of burbling up right now. And so I thought I would get the three of them. There's been more people obviously involved in this conversation than these three, but these three could be on the podcast and we can make a time work. And you guys have kind of been, you know, some of the major instigators here. Well, I don't know, instigators, maybe not a good word, but that's what we're going to be talking about is this community leadership discussion that's been going on. Real quick on the news and events front, I'm going to keep it short. In terms of new stuff on Drupalize Me, we just started a Twig series. So Twig is going to be in Drupal 8. The Twig series is not Twig in Drupal. It's just Twig. Twig is its own templating language. It exists separately. And our friends over at KMP University have a series all about using Twig, so you can sort of start to get a feel for what it is. What does it do? There's some cool stuff, playing with filters, fun stuff like that. And then we're coming back to Drupal specific with some responsive web design course that Amber has done coming up in a couple weeks. Also, just wanted to mention that registration for DrupalCon Bogota is now open. So you should go, sign up, you should go. I unfortunately can't, it just doesn't like work with my schedule. But I know Joe Schindler got his session accepted and he's going. Are any of you guys going?
I'm actually keynoting.
No.
Sweet. Cool.
I assume the sweet was to me keynoting, not to Greg
yeah,
not going.
Yes, yes, the sweet was to the keynote.
Yeah, there's been no formal announcement, but it's people have been talking about it, so I'm comfortable talking about it now. The keynotes for Bogota are Dries and me.
Sweet.
Nice.
Yeah, very nice.
I'm terrified.
Aw, you'll be awesome, man.
Are you? I'm sorry. Never mind. Kyle, you can edit that out, too.
We're already branching off from the conversation, yeah. And we haven't even started it yet.
Neither of us know what our keynotes are going to be yet, so.
Fair enough.
I was going to ask him if he was going to give his keynote in, and then I realized I didn't know what the official language in Colombia was, because I didn't know, like, is it Spanish? Because some of the others, they have Portuguese and stuff, and then I didn't want to sound stupid, and so never mind.
It's Spanish. Dries and I are both talking in English, but there are going to be some Spanish language sessions. I don't know offhand what the ratio is.
Yeah. I think it's...
All right.
Anyway, yes. Bogota. Awesome. Should totally go. It's going to be like... You're going to be down in Bogota like during the winter in the Northern Hemisphere.
Flying south through the winter for conferences is a good plan. Oh, I've done it before.
So awesome, yeah. Yeah, and then like in terms of events... I haven't checked like today, but December's not a big event month because everybody's started getting into holiday mode. And so there don't tend to be a lot of events that happen in December, which is fair enough. So with all of that said, in a very long-winded way, apparently, let's actually get to the point at hand, which is this community leadership thing. So let's just start off to get a little context and see what is the essence of this discussion that we're having and going to have on this podcast.
So I think that how this all came about is, you know, me and Larry and Gabor were all initiative leads for Drupal 8. I was the first one, and Larry was the second one, And so we were kind of making up this whole job as we go along. And one of the things that we were discovering is that organizing in the community is hard, especially as we've grown and we've become so, you know, large and big and trying to accomplish so many big things in Drupal 8. And one of the things that makes it hard is the sort of lack of a formal leadership structure in the community. Now, in some ways, that's really great because that also means that a lot of really amazing features in Drupal have bubbled up from the bottom up. And, you know, people have come into Drupal and been able to say, hey, I want to do something, and done it. That's one of the reasons our community has grown so large. But on the other hand, it can also make organizing around important and especially far-reaching changes really difficult. And, you know, all of us had been experiencing that in, I think, probably a variety of different ways. And the fact that all of these postings and writings came out around the same time is, I think, mostly coincidental. It wasn't really a plan. I had a keynote scheduled at Pacific Northwest Drupal Summit, which I had been preparing for a little bit before DrupalCon Amsterdam even happened. And then Larry had his core conversation at DrupalCon Amsterdam, and Gabor responded to it, and mine tied into all of that, and it just sort of all happened around the same time.
Cool. So, given that, nice framework. So, what are the problems? Like, what is the... Well, like, maybe we should start with Larry's session and his basic premises, and then we can discuss, like, where, because that seemed to start a lot of the chatter that ended up happening recently in blog posts and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Does that sound like a plan?
Sure. So my presentation in Amsterdam, actually, when I pitched it, I wasn't sure what I was going to say, so I kind of made it up closer to the date. But it's really just the latest installment in a long and ongoing discussion of, as Drupal grows, how much more structure do we need to add? And actually, last night did some research and started collecting a list of links to previous installments going all the way back to 2009 about a lot of the problems with our very informal structure. This particular talk, I linked the idea of an unstructured community to unstructured code. You know, we've all had the experience of talking with clients and telling them, no, your organizational chart is not your IA, because that is the natural tendency of organizations to do, is to produce products that mirror their org chart, not a good IA. And, you know, Drupal's org chart is, by design at this point, kind of a big, loosely coupled blob. And so that's the tendency. We have a tendency to then push our code in the same direction just because that's how humans work. And so I try to link these two concepts of, we need to piece apart our community more and provide more structure within the community so that we can then also piece apart and better control our growing code base. And these two problem spaces are linked. And that was kind of my thesis, that we need to, both for social and technical reasons, you know, begin to tease apart a lot of these concerns we have that just kind of interrelate too much. And one of the recommendations I had for that, as, you know, one proposal among many, is giving more autonomy to subsystem maintainers in core, and just letting them be more self-directed, having more local authority to make decisions about their small area, which would in turn help tease apart those different subsystems and core modules and so forth, which is the same model that, say, the Linux kernel uses. Is that the ideal answer? Not necessarily. It's, you know, the one that I threw out there. But mostly I wanted that conversation to happen around, you know, how can we add more structure in a way that is thoughtful to help both our community and the code base. That's...
Right.
That was the presentation in a nutshell.
Okay, cool.
So I think as Greg explained, all three of us are initiative leads, And I think initiatives are one of the structure forms that have grown to exist in Drupal 8. And it came out of the problem of Drupal core development being unstructured, and that we needed a way to focus effort, and we needed a way to show what kind of goals we have without setting a formal roadmap, which for some reason we don't really like to do. So instead, we had these topic areas that had leaders. And I think to the point of Greg, who said that we figured it out as we went along, we pretty much got an unstructured system where we've had these initiative leads that then had their full say of structuring their work however they liked. So we set up our own meetings, we set up our own tagging system, we set up our own discussions, our own sprints, etc. So I think the question is how far we can get this, how far we should get this, and how unified we should make this mm-hmm. in the community.
And I think one of the lessons that we've all kind of taken to heart by this point, because we've been talking about it for a while, is the idea of having a single initiative lead who then has, you know, you're the initiative lead, now go figure out what's happening and who's doing what is not good. And you really need a formally defined team, not just, you know, lots of people, but, you know, you need to have a group of people from the get-go who can be, you know, shepherds of the process all the way through, and therefore can also, you know, support each other as needed. I usually say the only initiative that was properly run was the Views initiative, where they had four people from the get-go with, you know, they knew what their roles were going to be within that team. They knew what their resourcing was. They had already arranged for time from their employers. So they knew how much time availability they had. They had, you know, tasks and a roadmap. And then anyone else that came in to help out was gravy. They had people do that, but they had that clear core team with explicit roles from the get-go, which no other initiative had. And I think that's something where we could all learn from that, certainly.
I think one of the interesting things about the Views team, though, and one of the reasons that it worked so well in that context, is that the scope of the project that they were trying to do was very, very focused mm-hmm. and very, very limited. Not limited, because obviously it was a big project, but it was extremely well-defined. And for a lot of us, our initiatives were much more wide-ranging, and I think in probably every single case grew to be much bigger than we ever envisioned them to. For instance, me and Gabor had a lot of discussion very early on about how much multilingual should be integrated into CMI, and I really wanted to keep my initiative and my project small and simple, and so I, you know, was very against that. And obviously, Gabor wanted to keep his initiative, his job was to make multilingual spread into all of the areas of Drupal where it needed to be. And so, you know, we worked a lot of that around. But I think there's a difference in the initiatives, in that me and Gabor came in with a set of functionality that we wanted to implement, and we were kind of technology agnostic about how it happened. And I think that Larry kind of came at it, and Larry can correct me if I'm wrong, from a different angle, where he came in with sort of a technical vision that he wanted to implement, which from his perspective is probably a lot more difficult, because and that's where he ran into problems with decision making, because we can make decision making about features pretty easily, but making decision making about technological direction in the core queues can be extremely difficult and contentious.
I think that's mostly fair. You know, when I was appointed as web services lead, there had already been a year's worth of discussion around some fairly deep changes to the routing system and the page layout system that, you know, were needed to enable a lot of different things. And, you know, so when we started, we had a very high level, you know, at a, you know, slideshow level, you know, blocks on on a whiteboard level, here's what we want to try and get towards. And then, okay, now how do we do that? Became part of the question. And you know, a lot of the largest impacts of the WSCI initiative, the Web Services Initiative, we hadn't expected when we started. We knew when we started we wanted to have, you know, a routing system that could deal with all of HTTP. We knew we wanted to have, you know, fewer globals so we could pass objects around. Using Symfony for that wasn't on anyone's radar when we started. That came in later. So that there was a lot of, you know, as we tacked, as we, you know, navigated through, all right, how do we implement this high-level vision? There's just a lot of Goldilocksing, I like to call it, a lot of Goldilocks problem of, you know, is this change too big for people to swallow? Is this too small to be understandable in light of that bigger picture? Does everyone understand that bigger picture? As that bigger picture got clearer as time went by, how many people realized how clear it was becoming and how many disagreed with layers of that? It was a challenge to, you know, steer that ship, especially when, and this I think goes to the leadership question, the, you know, whether or not I had access to the rudder depended on who you asked. And I think that's something that both Greg and I ran into when rubber meets the road. I mean, maybe using every metaphor I possibly can here.
Metaphor man.
But, you know, at a tactical level, as we're trying to implement the various strategies and strategic goals we had, you know, how much tactical decision-making ability did we have? And that varied widely from person to person and issue to issue and topic to topic and day to day. And that made it really, really hard to, you know, have a plan. You know, it's really hard to have a plan if you have no idea if you are going to be allowed to execute any given part of it.
So I think as open source leads, it's especially important for us to be good communicators, mm-hmm. because whatever we make up, unless we can implement it ourselves and we can push our way through to get it accepted, we would need to make people understand why we need to do that. We need to make people buy into implementing that and adopting that in their code and et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's a very key factor in open source leadership, because we don't have people who we can pay to do things even if they don't agree with what we want them to do. So we need to convince them in clear ways, and we need to communicate them what's going on. I think it's hard to have all the skills required in one person to be an initiative lead. So to be able to both do the technical planning for what should happen and to be able to communicate that clearly and then follow on with all the discussions. So that would tie back to what Greg and Larry said earlier, that we really need teams where the responsibility can be split between maybe figuring out this technical bit and being able to communicate it and follow through with all the feedback that people received. And I wanted to pitch a core conversation from Shannon Vettes from DrupalCon Prague and DrupalCon Portland, but she has a most recent version from DrupalCon Prague, where she got all the experiences from initiative leads and all the things that we wished we could have in our initiatives, and broke it down to specific roles in an initiative leadership team. So you could have fundraisers, you could have project managers, you could have technical leaders, you could have people who heard the new newcomers who come into the initiative and want to help. So that all the energy that is coming into to your cause is actually used wisely. And I think a lot of us would have benefited from starting off with that approach, and some of us found people to collaborate with on our initiative. But it would certainly be great to somehow figure out for the future how we can organically set up these teams without enforcing roles on people that they don't want to do.
I will mostly agree with everything Gabbard just said. Absolutely, communication is critical. And you know, Shannon's core conversation is another good one I need to add to my list for this conversation. And having, you know, those kind of formal roles within the team is absolutely helpful. That's something that we all, I think, suffered from not having. But that also has a scaling problem. And I think this goes to kind of the core of the debate, that there becomes a point past which communicate harder doesn't work as an answer. And, you know, we've all seen issues where there's lots of people involved and one loud voice is able to derail an entire issue, when that one issue is part of a 20-issue or a 20-patch process that is part of a roadmap. That becomes really, really destructive. And just having, you know, people to help with the clerical side and people to help with onboarding and people to help with outreach, in addition to, you know, architects and developers, doesn't solve that problem. It helps with trying to corral people to the same page, but it doesn't help with the, you know, unblocking the deadlock problem, which the larger your community is and the larger your project is and the larger your effort is, the more that comes up.
It's funny because I think we've all had that problem of our issues being derailed by one loud voice. But on the other hand, I think there have also been plenty of times when we've all been the one loud voice. And, yes. You know, the perspective of the fact that a loud voice can derail an issue changes when you are the loud voice, you know? And that speaks to sort of the dichotomy we have in the community, which as I'm extremely passionate about something, so I can fight to make my voice known and try and convince people. But on the other hand, when you're on the other side of that, it's like, oh my God, why won't this person just like give up? Everybody else wants this to go this one way, right? Like in a recent change, you know, when the CMI files were moved into the database, I wasn't very active in core by the time that happened. But if I had been, I would have been adamantly against that. I completely disagree with that change, and I'm sure that everybody else on the CMI team would have thought that I was crazy and wished that I would just shut up, you know. And that's like part of the interesting, again, dichotomy that we have right now. And I think it's not so much the problem that a voice can derail an issue. It's sort of when do we decide that we've heard all of the voices and then come to a conclusion, because mm-hmm. that's the part that we're that sometimes is missing in those more contentious issues, because right now, and I think everybody here has seen this happen, is basically just a war of attrition where the person who has the most energy and will to stand at the end tends to win, or if you can call that winning. But on the other hand, I also think that there are a lot of ways in which we, in various times, could be better at guiding those issues, or maybe not we, or somebody with a different set of skills. Obviously, Angie is very good at taking a group of people who are at odds and bringing them to a conclusion. It takes a lot of work, and it takes a different skill set, but there are definitely people who can make that happen, and recruiting those people into core development or mm-hmm. getting them or getting those skills into people already existing is, I think, a big deal. And while I won't argue that I think in some cases the decision making in Drupal could use a bit of a heavier hand, I also don't necessarily think that's ever going to happen, and we need to figure out ways to work within the framework that we've got.
Yeah, and that I would argue that the part of the lack of structure problem is, you know, which voices should be able to stall an issue in what situation. Not every voice should be able to stall any issue, because, you know, it's not, they're, you know, they're not a domain expert in that area. They don't have an investment. They are not, you know, or they do have an investment. They do have domain knowledge there, or they are someone who is responsible for something, so they should have, you know, more say in how it gets there. The example I used way back in, I think, 2010 or so, 2010, was, you know, at that point we had just had a very contentious overhaul of the UI for Drupal 7, the admin UI, led by Mark Bolton and Lisa Reichelt. And you know, a lot of people, you know, were pushing back hard on that. And, you know, I'd say so openly, a lot of the changes we made for Drupal 7's admin, I didn't like. They didn't appeal to me. They made life harder for me. And I should be listened to less than Mark and Lisa, because they're UX experts, and their voice should carry more weight on UX issues than mine does. Conversely, you know, if Mark Bolton says that, you know, he doesn't like a particular way we're doing a particular piece of OO modeling, object-oriented modeling and code, I'm going to ignore him. And just like he should ignore me in, you know, if I try to derail, you know, a detailed usability issue. And we don't have any kind of recognition around that fact. You know, that's an extreme example, but, you know, you want to have broad consensus of interested parties on an issue. But who's the interested party? Right now, our definition is whoever happens to show up on a given issue on a given day, which is a very bad way of defining interested party. And, you know, if you ask, you know, 5 different people, you'll get 8 different answers about, you know, who, quote, should have buy-in on a given topic. And that's part of the problem. We just don't have any kind of clarity around, you know, who the informal de facto domain experts are, which means even if you are one, you may not even know it. And that contributes to the stress of working on Drupal.
Right. But so that comes down to 2 different things. One is open source is inherently around trying to make people happy. Because if they are not happy anymore, they may stay around for a while, stubborn, and poison the community, but they will not be useful parts of the community, right? So we want them to be happy, so we don't want to impose a lot of rules on them, which is, at least that's the idea. And the other idea is that whoever needs to be the parties to sign off, you cannot really rely on them to be available all the time. Like last week, I was all week in hospital after an appendectomy, after surgery, and I was not available. I didn't have a computer on me. So whatever needed to happen at that time around multilingual or config, whatever that I'm working on, I wasn't there to be able to provide feedback. And should Drupal wait for me because I'm not available? I don't know. I don't think. So I don't know how to resolve those 2 things without being able to pay someone and then being able to say that, okay, you're responsible and you should be available.
Especially in the context of certain subsystems that are extremely complicated. I mean, I can think of field system, for instance, as one, and the node access system as another. I can think of maybe 2 people in the world that really truly understand each of those subsystems, not the same 2 people for each. Maybe it may be up to 4 now, right? But it gets really hard when you talk about stuff like that, especially in a situation like the access control system, which is obviously really crucial. And again, these people are all volunteers. I mean, I don't want to sidetrack into the funding discussion because that's sort of a separate thing, but it does in a lot of ways feed into the kind of things that we're talking about now, and the fact that, you know, in a lot of ways we're all trying to support a commercial business product without any of the resources of or organization of a commercial business product, which is interesting in a lot of ways.
Which is part of why, as you like pointing out, most open source projects past a tiny size are backed by one big company who has most of the steering and most of the resources. Not all, but many to most. Except for, and this is something I touched on in my talk in Amsterdam, except for the really, really big projects, which is, there's like 9 that are supersized projects, of which Drupal is one. And they all somehow have, you know, broad communities rather than a single controlling company. That's Drupal, KDE, Linux, GNOME, Perl, you know, a couple of others. I forget the full list offhand. But, you know, I think it's worth looking at a lot of these others to see, so how do they structure themselves, and where do they compromise that grassroots feel in order to have a structure in which a grassroots system can thrive. I actually think, you know, Greg, you mentioned the funding question. Anyone who has not seen Dries' keynote from DrupalCon Amsterdam, please go see it. It's his best keynote in several years, I think, talking about, you know, the tragedy of the commons in open source and how you need to put some kind of reward structure in place to keep resources coming in. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily destroy the volunteerism that does happen. It enables it in places where it can work. And I think that's the balance that we need to try and strike on structure as well, is having just enough structure and just enough formality that we can enable that, you know, volunteer grassroots mindset and ethos to the extent possible, and, you know, create a structure in which that can flourish, whereas just a big unkempt system the size of Drupal is not that. It's something that Lisa Welchman talked about in her keynote at DrupalCon Prague last year, and the paradox of open growth, about how, you know, as you grow, you need to have some kind of control on growth so that it doesn't spiral out of control. It doesn't, you know, flop over. You know, it's like you have to, you know, trim a tree to get it to grow big. You still need to have, you know, some kind of direction on a community as it grows to keep it healthy. And that's the part that I think we're missing, is that, you know, rebalancing of just how much structure do we need to keep the volunteerism healthy. And we don't have enough yet. We need to figure out what we need to add to get to that point without going too far.
I mean, the other thing that you know, obviously in my post I touched a lot about community problems, less from the technical aspect and more from the social interactions side, which I think is while it's.
And I think that is something to point out. My presentation came from an angle of, you know, this problem hurts our code base as well as us. Yours came from this is harmful to people angle. And I think both are very valid. You know, so I'm glad you took a different tack on it than I did. Because, you know, for people on the inside, yeah, it gets very unhappy. And, you know, I have seen people get very, very hurt by our attrition-based core development process. And I, to some extent, I acknowledge I've even been part of some of that in some cases. And that bothers me that, you know, things I've done in order to work within our limited structure by their nature end up hurting people. And I don't like that.
We have a system that encourages jerks.
Kind of.
Or jerk-like behavior.
It's interesting because I talked in my article, obviously, about how, you know, the combination of a lot of the way that we're structured now and the sort of light leadership that we have and the light touch we have over core development in general. I mean, you know, not just from a technical side, but from a behavioral aspect, made my job very difficult when I was doing my initiatives. And I think all of these things tie together. You know, we had a big Twitter discussion about this several weeks ago, and Larry pointed out that we both came out of the initial lead process with different scars, but that a lot of them stem from the same fundamental organizational and structural issues. And I think that, you know, a focus on, you know, when we talk about leadership, but we're also talking about burnout and keeping contributors going and organizing contributors and being role models for contributors and continuing to encourage and motivate people to contribute in a way that isn't positive, but still, you know, rewarding them for that is a big problem we have. It was a big problem for me as a leader. It was a big problem for a lot of people as contributors. And it's not something we've really addressed as a community very closely. We've done it a lot in our events. You know, that's been a very big topic of discussion around DrupalCons over the last decade or so. But, you know, when we talk about it in the core community and about how we behave in the issue queues and stuff like that, it's never really been a thing that we focus on. And I think that's a really big mistake on the part of the project.
So the way that it was handled at DrupalCon is, like, we have this code of conduct, right? And we have a general community code of conduct too. There are actually two separate ones, which is strange in a whole other conversation. But, right, it comes down to enforcement and, enforcement mm-hmm. of the code of conduct, right? So, like, if someone's being a jerk, what do we do about that? I mean, how do we change that, even if we have rules, which we do, theoretically?
Right. I mean, and I've spent a lot of time since my article came out talking to people about that. And I think there are a lot of things that we're missing. I mean, even back when I started my initiative, we didn't even have the community working group, for instance, which we have now. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of tasked with starting to talk about and, you know, respond to these events as they happen. But they also don't have a defined set of guidelines that I think is nearly specific enough. And I think that when we talk about, because there are a lot of core behaviors that undermine people that are very subtle, that, you know, are a lot more subtle than coming out and saying, you know, you need to go stick your head in a microwave. You know, I mean, obviously that's not a very good thing, but, you know, there's a lot of other ways in which core developers undermine each other that have nothing to do with, you know, the language that they use necessarily. And so I would love to see more of that laid out in, you know, more explicitly with, you know, specific examples and stuff like that. And I would love to see more people, I've never done this either, calling out that behavior when they see it in the queues, because, you know, I think that as more and more people would do that, more it would become kind of a stampede, right? Because I don't think anybody's going to disagree that any of these behaviors are destructive. And I had a talk after I gave my keynote. I had a really long talk with Angie at Pacific Northwest Drupal Summit about a lot of my ideas for community working group, and hopefully some of that stuff will start to, you know, make its way out soon.
I think one good way to try to catch this early, at least one that worked for me, is if you try to not let people be indispensable. If you can set up teams where the know-how is shared, where there's multiple people working on the same things, or if somebody falls out, then there's somebody else that can take on some of that work, then there's a lot less pressure on someone that if they don't stand for whatever needs to happen there, then nobody else will. Mm-hmm. And in my initiative, I've had people who had relatives died and they've fallen off the initiative for a month or more. I've had people with severe medical problems. And I try to work on growing people so that they can work with each other, which is good for peer review, but also good when somebody falls off, that there's not like one person that's indispensable and impossible to replace, so they don't feel like they need to be here, however stressed they are, and they need to solve this, and they will shout at everyone who tries to stop them because they don't have the time to deal with them anymore. And also one thing I tried to do is to try to make myself replaceable. So When I'm off, I always rely on a few people to do the meetings for the multilingual initiative, and they do it very well. We built a session and a workshop with a full curriculum, a two-three-hour workshop where people can walk through the Drupal 8 multilingual improvements, and that was delivered, both the session and the workshop, by different people across the globe. So it's not like the initiative is reliant on me to spread and to work. So I'm trying to set things up in a way where there's not one person who can burn out in it and will need to shoulder all the pain.
Another aspect of that is that when you have, because, you know, you depend on somebody then even if they're an you want to keep them around. He might have to beep that. But you know what I mean? Like, there's also the element of, well, we really need this person. And so even if they're causing pain, you know, it's going to cause all this other pain because nobody else knows that. It's that kind of a thing. And so it's like, if somebody gets out of hand, it's much easier for the community to say, I'm sorry, but you're causing more harm than good, and other people can carry on your work.
No, that's totally, totally true. And I would agree with all of that. And another thing that I think is important is, you know, because we talked about teams earlier, and, you know, I talked about some of my problems dealing with people in my initiative who not only were working at odds to me and the group, but also had an enormous, far more time to do it than I did. And when you've got a team of people, you can all kind of, you know, the team is aggregated time, right? And so it allows you, again, to drive the conversation, to drive the issues more. And if you are dealing with somebody like that, to spread the load around, because when that all falls on one person, it can be really kind of crushing, to be honest, you know. And it doesn't sound, and it doesn't come off as looking like, you know, two individuals, you know, facing off together. It's this group of people who are trying to get something done. And, you know, mm-hmm. the other person is the person who's the outlier. And so, you know, I think that's just another way in which, you know, team, building a team is important. And by far, if I was to say the one thing that I wish I had done at the very beginning of the initiative, it's that I would have collected people in a team to run things from the beginning.
Yeah, I would agree. That's, you know, building a team from zero is itself a very hard task and a specialized skill. And, you know, I think Gabor, of all of the initiative leads, you probably did the best job of that. So hats off to you for that. It's something I kept trying to do. And, you know, there's probably been several dozen people, I would say, that have been part of the Whiskey team over the last, coming up on four years or so now. But very few of them really stayed around long enough to form a solid, continual core team all the way through. And that, I think, is something that has hurt, just from a velocity perspective, if nothing else. Because it means I then spend a lot of time, you know, explaining things to the next round of people who are going to stick around for a little while. Many of those people did amazing work, but, you know, I just was never able to get the same kind of, you know, stable team structure and stable team culture that Gabor was able to. And, you know, that did hurt. But at the same time, you know, as I said, it's a specialized skill to be able to build that. And, you know, as we said, trying to put that skill and, you know, figuring out technical architecture and evangelism and, you know, project management all on the same person is a very tall order, shall we say.
Yeah. Metaphor. So we are running out of time. Does anybody have any last thoughts they wanted to toss in there or something that they didn't get to say that they wanted to put out there?
I guess I just want to reiterate that I don't think this is not a new problem. It's mm-hmm. a problem we've been talking about for at least 5 years.
And it's not even a new problem, like, in humanity.
Right.
Oh, no, and it's interesting because, you know, when you look at this, it's like this is a problem that's faced by passionate, large, volunteer-driven groups of all stripes. Mm-hmm. Eaton has a lot of interesting stories about dealing with very, very similar problems with mega churches in Illinois, you know.
But it's, you know, it's not a new problem. It's also a problem that is born of our success, in a sense. You know, it's a scaling problem. We've gotten really, really big, which means we have problems of really, really big projects. It's not something that we're going to be able to solve or address by saying, you know, let's put more tools around people evangelizing. Let's put more tools around, you know, communicate better. Let's put more tools around, you know, all these kind of amorphic skills. some of the answer has to be, you know, let's put a better skeleton in place that we can then have that organic growth around. What that skeleton is, you know, is a fair question. There have been a couple of proposals for that. I think they're all worth considering. You know, we can iterate on that, certainly. As Dries said in Amsterdam, a partial solution is better than no solution. But, you know, it's not something that we can communicate our way out of. We have to, at some level, start adding this structure, start adding process carefully in order to, you know, enable us to scale to the level we have been, or to the level we're at and the level that we want to get to. And, you know, the challenge will be adding the right amount of structure and the right amount of, you know, formal authority and the right amount of, you know, formal processes so that it gets the job done and creates that environment for volunteerism to thrive without becoming stifling. Because you certainly could go too far and it becomes stifling and no one wants to do anything and that would suck. Let's not do that. Just getting that, you know, just enough formality, just enough structure added to what we have, I think, is the big challenge. But we're not going to be able to solve these problems without it.
Right. I agree. This is an amazing problem to have, that we are on this scale, that we need to deal with these problems. And to tie back to where we started from, we've been trying to figure out these details as we went along. And I just wanted to pay it forward to Shannon Vitesse and Kathy Thace, who provided me great mentoring and great inspiration for growing people in my initiative and doing the right things. Thank you.
And I want to thank you guys for everything that you've been through, you know, not just the work, like doing the initiative, doing all of the actual work, going through these periods, I know, of sometimes intense pain, but also to continue this conversation and to be leaders in terms of looking at the problems and having open conversations about them so that we can fix them. I think, like, that's tremendous. And so I thank you guys from the bottom of my heart.
You're welcome. And, you know, it's been, you know, I had actually walked away for a while. And as I told Angie and Catch recently, you know, one of the nice things about getting this post and doing this talk was that I reconnected with a lot of people in the community that I really care about. And so, you know, we've got a great bunch of people, and I agree with Gabor that this is an amazing problem to have. And, you know, we wouldn't have gotten where we were if things weren't really good in a lot of ways too.
Yep. Okay. On that note, we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I really do appreciate you guys coming on, and I'm sure I will be seeing and talking with you guys at various events and such in the future. So yeah, thank you very much. To our listeners, if you guys have questions or thoughts, obviously you'll be able to leave comments on the podcast, but also feel free to shout out to us at Drupalize Me about this podcast, but also other podcasts. If there are other things you'd really like to hear about, let us know at twitter.com/DrupalizeMe, facebook.com/DrupalizeMe, or go to drupalize.me and use our contact form to let us know what's on your mind. So, yep, thanks everybody, and happy Drupalin'.